Conservation has a long history in the U.S. as we look back to the creation of the national parks and all the efforts since to protect species from extinction and preserve habitats. A new book asks readers to take another look at conservation through the lived experiences of indigenous people and their environmental knowledge.
Wendell Panichibiguri, I'm Jessica Hernandez, and I'm an indigenous scholar from the Maya Chorti and Zapotec Nations.
In Fresh Banana Leaves, Healing Indigenous Landscapes Through Indigenous Science, Hernandez uses stories of her own family and other firsthand accounts by indigenous people to shift the perspective of how conservation is practiced and who benefits from it. I recently spoke with her about some of the themes in her book. I want to start with the title of your book, Fresh Banana Leaves. There's a story about banana leaves in your father's life. He was forced to be a child soldier in the Civil War in El Salvador in the 1980s. How did a banana tree save his life?
Yeah, so my father was unfortunately forced to join the guerrilla, the opposing forces against the army. And that was because, you know, we were losing a lot of our men during the Central American Civil War. So their next push was to recruit children, especially boys as young as 11. And in this guerrilla encampment, there was a tree that he had built a strong connection and relationship with. It was a tree that he would climb to gather bananas for the other children or his comrades in that sense. And this was a banana tree that he will seek as a sanctuary to kind of ignore the reality that he was facing, especially at a young age, and, you know, use his imagination as a little boy to, you know, escape that harsh reality. So his Hoguería encampment was bombarded and attacked. He saw a bomb dropping while he was standing under the banana tree. Instead of the bomb igniting, he saw how the banana leaves wrapped in a way that prevented the bomb from igniting. And, you know, that seems like surreal at times, but it was just based on, you know, the teaching that he has passed down to me and, you know, my generation, that, you know, nature protects you as long as we protect nature. And I think that it was a way for the banana leaves to give him a fresh start, right? Because he was able to seek refuge after that incident, especially as he made it through Guatemala, Mexico, and eventually, you know, United States.
How did his story impact your decision to pursue environmental science?
So I think his story kind of plays a big role in, like, my life today and even all the teachings that I embody, given that, you know, my father, he had siblings, but they were younger, so they weren't of age to be recruited. You know, he was the only one displaced from his family. And then he met my mom in Oaxaca, in the Zapotec Pueblo, and she was the only one displaced from her family. So I think that being in connection with my relatives back home, even though we were displaced, allowed me to foster a relationship with nature, allow me to understand that even in the diaspora, outside of our ancestral lands, we can build those relationships with nature. It obviously requires us to reclaim those relationships because we're in a different environment. But I think that, you know, just learning from his teachings, learning from his lived experiences, especially seeing how nature protected him in his hardest, you know, times of life, especially during the war, it kind of allowed me to become more curious of, like, what's the, you know, the science behind nature, environmental sciences. And that's why I decided to, you know, when I was given the opportunity and privilege to pursue higher academia, I decided to go into the environmental sciences.
You write about your indigenous family in Mexico and about a concept that your grandmother taught you of being an unwelcome guest or a welcome guest on the land. What did she mean by that? And how does this idea help inform your work?
She always kept in mind that, you know, we were displaced, especially, you know, my parents and, you know, their children eventually, which one of them is me. And I think that that was just her way of making me understand that anywhere that I walked in, that was not my ancestral lands, I was walking in someone's home, right? And I was walking in someone's home as an unwelcome guest. And in order for me to become a welcome guest, I had to navigate building those relationships with the land and also the people who have that historical record of being the original stewards and caretakers of these lands. And I think that as a result of that, anywhere that I go or end up having to move because of education or job opportunities, I am reflecting on how I can build those relationships with the indigenous communities and indigenous lands that I'm currently occupying. So I think it's, you know, manifesting the fact that if we're not in our ancestral lands, we are in someone's home, and we have to, you know, build those relationships to be welcome into their homes.
You write about relationship about all of the ways that environment is part of everyday life in indigenous communities, especially in Mexico, you write about, from traditional food plots to embroidery work. Can you say a little bit more about that relationship?
It ties back to how we pass on our knowledges, right? Because our knowledges are not published, they're not written in peer review articles, but we pass our knowledges through our traditions of storytelling. And coming from a family of artisans, especially where our women embroider and they weave our flowers, our regalia, our traditional clothing, I always understood that we were always kind of using nature as our canvas. So we will embroider a lot of the native flowers to our region. We will embroider, you know, stories that the flowers can tell, especially if you come from a family that embroiders, you know, you can see a huipil, which is our traditional clothing, and see what kind of story it's telling, what kind of personality it's invoking. And I think that it shows how our relationships with nature can also be manifested through art, which is something that, you know, in the Western cultures is not as welcome, especially in the sciences, because, you know, we tend to view art or social sciences as something outside of our realm, when in reality, you know, they can all be interconnected.
How was your Indigenous knowledge and experience challenged by professors and advisors in your academic career?
Oftentimes, you know, when it comes to Indigenous knowledges or lived experiences, they're ignored because, you know, we don't have, you know, what they consider valid forms of, you know, citing or valid forms that kind of support our lived experiences or firsthand observations. So I think that in that sense, you know, I was told to separate myself from the science. And I think that's hard because when we look at how Indigenous communities see the world, you know, we see it through a holistic lens where everything's interconnected. I think that in sciences, in the name of objectivity, we tend to remove ourselves and our entire spirituality from practicing science because, you know, it has to be objective.
How did you reconcile that?
Yeah, I think I'm still reconciling that. And I think that, you know, part of that is us redefining what we view as science and pushing against the narrative where, you know, we have to continue separating ourselves, where we have to just focus on the numerical data without incorporating the lived experiences.
You write that conservation groups have romanticized Indigenous people and culture. How does Indigenous science and conservation differ from mainstream conservation or Western conservation?
Yeah, I think the main difference is that even in many of our native languages, when I'm trying to explain conservation, like there's not really a word that kind of translates to conservation. Part of the words that, you know, kind of touch upon what conservation is trying to or attempting to do is healing or protecting. And I think that that kind of makes conservation different because, you know, we're not trying to save, we're trying to heal or protect, and we're not just focusing on one puzzle piece, right? We're trying to focus on the entire puzzle, you know, completed.
What do you want non-Indigenous people to take away from the book?
Part of the healing is a collective healing, right? That oftentimes, you know, we all play a major role in it. And I think that oftentimes, you know, it can push non-Indigenous readers to kind of feel attacked or take things personal. But I think that part of the healing is also reflecting on one's positionality, learning the true histories of the spaces or places we occupy, and also uplifting those voices. And I think that for non-Indigenous peoples, I just want them to know that everyone plays a role in the collective healing. It's just that we are all playing different roles. In order for us to truly liberate our lands, we also have to liberate ourselves. And, you know, hopefully as we continue living on, especially in the 7 generations, you know, they're going to be doing a different type of healing. But right now, our healing is kind of coming together at the table and being able to collectively have conversations, listen to one another without taking it personal, without, you know, feeling like we're the ones being attacked, when it's a bigger discussion that kind of points to the larger systems, right? And not us individually as well.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me.
No, I think these were all great questions. Thank you for, like, you know, providing the space and asking them.
Jessica Hernandez is an Indigenous scholar, scientist, and community advocate who teaches at the University of Washington, Bothell. Her postdoctoral research focuses on energy and climate impacts. She's the author of Fresh Banana Leaves, Healing Indigenous Landscapes Through Indigenous Science. And there's more at AlleghenyFront.org. You're listening to The Allegheny Front. I'm Carol Holsapple.